Go get a pumpkin spice latte and tell me what you taste. Hashtag IBMOC talk.
Hashtag real pumpkin.
Hashtag real pumpkin.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 23 of the I Brew My Own Coffee podcast. We're the podcast for people who care about coffee. I'm your host, Brian Sheely. And joining me today, as always, is my caffeinated cohort in crime, Mr. Brian Beike. What's up, Brian?
Not a lot. What's going on with you?
Hey, you know, just living the life, living the dream and stuff and things. You excited about this episode?
I'm very excited about this episode. I'm excited this episode mainly for the guest that we have on this episode.
Exactly. So he is the director of coffee at Misto Box Coffee. He is also a veteran of the I Brew My Own Coffee podcast. If you go back to episode 13, you can hear a whole conversation between him and Alex. Mr. Seth Mills, welcome to the episode, Seth.
Thanks for having me, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good, man.
I thought you were going to say he was the director of crime at Misto Box.
The director of crime.
That's where I thought I was going at first. The director of...
The Masked Marauder.
That's my part-time gig.
That's good.
Is that what you do for Halloween's coming up? What do you guys... Do you guys dress as anything coffee-related for Halloween? This is stupid. Let's keep
No, going. Dude. I used to go as a Starbucks barista zombie. My wife and I would wear green aprons and we'd do zombie makeup. It was pretty dumb. So we're going to start out this episode before we get into our topic for today by talking about what we're brewing. Brian, what are you brewing?
I recently had Goshen Coffee's Gedeb Ethiopia that's been on my mind and in my brewing devices. So, but I don't, I'm, it's a tie for how I liked it brewed. I had some of it as espresso that I was really enjoying, just as single espresso. And then I also had a V60 of it that I really, really enjoyed. The espresso was nice, but I have a hard time describing it on the air, only because I think whenever people talk about a really lemony espresso, that's usually like, hey, bro, that's not a good thing.
Right.
But I mean this in the good way. If whether it be an Ethiopian coffee or a geisha coffee, sometimes it has that candied citrus that's kind of balanced by some really great sweetness from melon to stone fruit. But overall, as espresso, it just had a really nice mouthfeel, nice tactile experience. I know that you two both drink espresso, so you know what I'm talking about when you get a shot that kind of just comes out the way it should taste. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Totally.
Yep.
So it gave me that as espresso, and then the V60 that I had, it was a little bit less spicy than some of the other Ethiopians we've had this year, which this is going to be really great to talk about later in this episode with what we're talking about, because if somebody were to hear me talk about spicy, they're like, well, like Taco Bell, spicy hot sauce.
Yep.
So in light of the conversation we're having today, I'm trying to dance around the description of these coffees. But really flavorful, really fragrant, a lot of sweetness. So it's been a good coffee.
You kind of made me mad when I saw that you had chosen this coffee, because it was going to be my choice as well.
Dude, it can be your choice. It doesn't matter.
No, no,
you can
it's
double
okay.
up. Double up.
We can have different choices. It's all right. No,
but you, the if you Gedeb want to have it be really, the same really choice, good, you can have it be the same choice.
Okay, so obviously Brian and I have chosen similar coffees. Hopefully, Seth, you have also not chosen the Gedeb.
I haven't, although it's not too far from that. I also have, I'm also brewing up an Ethiopian coffee. We actually recently added Huckleberry to our roaster lineup, which I'm really excited about. And I have a sample of their Ethiopia Guji Iraga. That's a washed Ethiopian for this time of year, especially as we're ending the summer. It's like pretty much the perfect coffee for right now. And I've been brewing it on the Gino Dripper. It's kind of been my brewer of choice lately. I kind of go back and forth between that and the V60-01, but...
So what's the big deal about the Gino Brewer? It's probably the first time it's been mentioned in any depth here on the show.
Yeah, it's so it's made by Not Neutral, which is based out of LA. They do all sorts of really cool, they're really well known for their kind of iconic Not Neutral cappuccino, espresso, and drip coffee cups. They're mugs. They're just really beautiful, clean, white, kind of. They have that very iconic handle to them. So they wanted to make a brewer that kind of went along with that entire product line. So it's a double-walled glass brewer with a flat bottom, kind of in the same format and style as the Kalita dripper would be. It's around the same size as like the 185 Kalita would be. But it's double-walled, so there's no handle on it, so you can just grab it, and it's cool to the touch. It's a flat-bottom brewer, so you have kind of a different brew bed dynamic than you would with something like a V60 or a Chemex, which is a cone.
So, not to pander to the guest, obviously with Seth being with Misto Box Coffee, my choice this week was actually a coffee that came in my Misto Box subscription, which is pretty cool. It is from Portola Coffee Lab in California. It is also a washed Ethiopian. So we're tripling up here on the washed Ethiopians this week. It is the Guji Special Prep, or the Guji Grade 1. It is pretty amazing. And I love this cup because when I first brewed it, I didn't really enjoy it all that much. Like, you ever have a coffee and the first few sips, you're kind of just like, meh, it tastes like coffee. That's sort of what it did for me. I wasn't very impressed right off the bat. And so I let it sit for a few minutes. And I came back to it, and it had just totally opened up, like flavors that weren't there, you know, minutes before that. As it starts to cool off, it was sweet citrus, and you got sort of these almost like floral and creamy body. And it turned out, like, toward the end, it had this almost cinnamony sort of spicy, like graham cracker thing going on. It was very good, and I enjoyed it a lot, so much so that we actually brewed it up this morning for my coworkers in the office, and everybody was just loving it. So on this episode, we are going to talk about something that was actually brought up really early on when Brian and I took over the podcast. Somebody sent us some feedback over email and basically asked us the question, how do I taste and describe coffee without sounding like a dork? And so on this episode, we're talking with Mr. Seth Mills, who actually does this for a living. Isn't that correct, Seth? This is pretty much one of the main things that you do every day.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're talking with Seth about how to describe coffee, maybe why we would even try to describe coffee. You know, is this something that we should be doing? And I think probably for most of us, the most important thing that we're going to take away from this is some steps and maybe some practical tips that you can, you know, employ when you're actually tasting a coffee, describing a coffee, trying to sum up what you think about a coffee, whether you're a coffee professional or whether you're just a coffee enthusiast drinking coffee in the morning. How do you describe coffee? Is this even something that we should be talking about?
Dude, it absolutely should be. It kind of depends on, you know, to go back to your question, like, why do we taste coffee at all? Or why are we evaluating coffee from a flavor standpoint? I think it all comes down to what you want to get out of it. So if you're a professional who works in coffee, your job depends on your ability to taste coffee and, develop your sensory ability to perceive it and then be able to communicate that effectively with your customers as well as other people that you work with. On the other end, if you're, you know, kind of on the other side of the counter, so to speak, or if you are an enthusiast or a coffee drinker at home, being able to, you know, pick up on, you know, really subtle nuances may not be as important, but I think that it can add a huge depth to take your enjoyment of coffee to the next level.
Like, when you drink a cup of coffee, you know what it tastes like, but being able to put that into words and describe that in some meaningful way just seems like something that we don't just naturally have the tools to do. I don't know. For me, describing coffee has always felt kind of forced, but something that just doesn't flow naturally in in a discussion or anything like that.
The other day I had a guy at my office and I brewed up a coffee that what I would perceive as very different tasting than, you know, a traditional coffee. So if I were to describe the taste of it. So, you know, and he's not a coffee drinker. So I'm just assuming, well, this is going to kind of open his eyes, you know, to what coffee can be, what coffee can taste like. And I'm ready to kind of describe some flavor or whatever. And he just takes a sip and he goes, ugh, it just tastes like bad coffee. Right. So we're both on different levels of understanding kind of the terminology, which is actually is one thing that's been on my mind lately. I wonder sometimes as somebody who's kind of trying to continue to grow my palate or understanding of how to describe certain flavors in a coffee to someone else, does it just taste like coffee? Or are these things actual noticeable things? Like if I think that something tastes really juicy and fruity, is that something that someone else can pick up on? Or have I just made this connection? And, you know, so these are questions that sometimes I have, I imagine listeners of the podcast have as well.
Yeah. I think in my experience, a lot of the difficulty with tasting or, you know, being able to communicate those flavor experiences that you're having with other people is that by and large, a lot of people are not, evaluating or even like identifying their sensory experiences on a regular basis. And tasting coffee, tasting beer, food, cocktails, being able to describe it is a practice skill. And so the more you do it, the better you get at it. But for a lot of people, we kind of go about our day, we eat our food, we're constantly consuming things, but we're not necessarily consciously consuming them. And in my experience, that's the biggest thing that makes that kind of can disconnect people from being able to understand or relate actual flavor notes to each other. So sorry.
Now quickly, let's get back to what you kind of mentioned just a bit ago in terms of roasters and their kind of marketing to people. So the reason we even brought this topic up and the reason why we wanted to have Seth on too is because we as drinkers, we feel like there is an expectation in the cup that we must meet. And the reason why that is because a lot of roasters do provide tasting notes to try and guide you through a cup.
Because it's right on the bag.
I think flavor notes on bags has been done kind of in the best intention. Obviously, to experienced tasters, a semi-washed Indonesian coffee is going to taste very different than a natural Ethiopian, which is going to taste totally different than a washed Central American. And so roasters and importers have, you know, over time gradually gone further and further down the rabbit hole of, you know, trying to differentiate coffees so that we're better able to match up customers with coffees that we think that they're going to like based on the flavor notes that we provide. The danger in that is people don't always understand, and we don't always do a great job as professionals of breaking that down and explaining how the flavor notes on the bag actually relates to the cup. And, you know, there's also danger in, you know, using really, you know, and I've talked about this a lot on Twitter. I recently wrote a blog about it, but, you know, roasters get really specific with their flavor notes, you know, as a way of selling the coffee to make it sound, you know, more appealing by putting more exotic fruit notes or more, you know, kind of unusual flavors on the bag. You know, it seems like a more exclusive or, you know, more interesting bag of coffee.
Enticing.
Yeah, it's more enticing. And I mean, it does a great job of marketing. But then a lot of the times, you know, a lot of my customers or a lot of, you know, friends or family will go and taste that coffee and say, what the hell are they talking about? I didn't get any of that.
So James Hoffman, he's got a blog. I don't know how active he is on it still, but
he writes a post about every 3 months or so.
He's got such good information dating back super far, jim7.com. And there's a blurb that I wanted to kind of just read out here, and we'll link it in the show notes so you can read more about what he says, and then some other really interesting articles there too. But kind of tying into what you're saying, and this is where I think some of the problem is as those notes have gotten more detailed. So this says, flavors are the most intimidating part of tasting, as well as the most frustrating. Roasters use flavors not only to describe particular notes such as nutty or floral, but also to convey a wide range of sensations. Describing a coffee as having ripe apple notes also communicates expectations for sweetness and acidity. If you do identify individual flavors, great, note it down. If not, then don't worry. Any words or phrases that describe what you're tasting qualify as being useful. Random words or flavors. Often upon reading the label, you'll have your frustrations relieved as you find the word to describe what you tasted that you just couldn't pull from the back of your brain. It suddenly seems so obvious. This is part of building a coffee-specific vocabulary of flavors. Aromas and tastes that you'll initially find out of context in coffee become what I describe as coffee versions of. You can't stress enough how important the comparative part of this is. Tasting one coffee at a time means that you can focus all you want, but without something to compare it to, you're working based on your memory of previous coffee, which is unfortunately patchy, flawed, and inaccurate.
You know, if you're in your kitchen sitting down with a cup of coffee by yourself, trying to increase your coffee vocabulary, you know, random words, random flavors, whatever you're tasting goes. You know, you can describe a coffee however you want as you're in the process of tasting it, you know, because you're not necessarily trying to communicate that to anyone. So it seems like there's a couple of different categories of people who are describing coffees and communicating coffees. There's sort of the business side of it and kind of the personal side of it on your end.
Yeah, totally. I think that, you know, it's important to note that every time you see, you know, notes from an importer or from a roaster, that kind of has one purpose, and that's almost more so to impact and kind of direct your purchasing decisions. And then on the other end of it, you know, when you taste a coffee by yourself or when you're tasting coffee with other people, that kind of is more, it has a different purpose altogether of, you know, you're actually experiencing it and, you know, you get to kind of have your own experience of, you know, seeing if that coffee matches up to you with what they say it tastes like.
What are some of the factors, I guess, that impact the way that a coffee tastes?
I mean, it's important to note that there are, coffee is a more complex beverage than wine even. So, you know, most customers are totally aware that, you know, different wines have different tasting notes, and they're very familiar with, you know, wines having different values and, you know, different styles of wine having different, you know, kind of specific flavor attributes to it. Wine has around 600 different unique chemical compounds that contribute to flavor. Coffee actually has upwards of over 800 unique chemical compounds naturally found in the coffee itself that contributes to flavor. So that is from how it's grown, you know, where it's grown. So just like wine, the terroir, the soil where it's grown, you know, so coffees from Central America are going to taste different than coffees from South America and from Africa and from Indonesia. So they all kind of have, you know, the soil, the ground where it comes from, that's going to impart a huge factor. The elevation that it's grown at is going to contribute to the density of the coffee, but it'll also contribute to the brightness or the acidity of the coffee. How it's processed plays, you know, as big of a role as the origin does. A washed coffee is going to be a little bit cleaner, more refined. A lot of people like to compare washed coffees kind of more like white wine, a little bit crisper, a little bit brighter. And natural coffees are a little bit more like red wine, where they have a lot of that big fruit-forward flavor to them. So processing has a huge factor on it. And then roasting also can kind of either highlight those flavors that are naturally there from where it's grown and where it's processed, or they can complement it, you know, kind of like a medium roast will, you'll leave some of the acidity, some of those origin characteristics intact, but you'll also, you know, hide some of them a little bit and bring in some kind of a little bit of roast or subtle malt flavor to it. And then, you know, if it's a darkly roasted coffee, then that's going to kind of take over all of the origin character, all of the processing character, and then it's just going to totally overwhelm it with lots of smoke and char kind of flavor. So all of those, attributes from where it comes from and how it's processed and how it's roasted, all of those kind of impart what the final cup is going to end up tasting like.
You buy a bag of coffee, and yeah, it might have a series of tasting notes printed on it, or you might find it on the website for the roaster. But it also, for the most part, tends to have a lot of additional information, like the things that you've mentioned, elevation, obviously processing methods and location and all these other factors that you talk about. And those are as important to getting an understanding of how the coffee is going to taste as the flavor notes themselves. So, you know, you can actually, after, you know, you've experienced a lot of these coffees at various elevations and at various, you know, regions and processing methods, you could kind of almost get a sense of what it's going to be like, even before you've actually bought it and brewed it and tasted it yourself. So I guess that's really helpful. You know, not really understanding why all that information is on a bag, even because all those pieces contribute to the overall puzzle of what a coffee is gonna end up tasting like.
Absolutely, and I think that it, you know, a lot of the times I get that a lot of from our customers of, you know, I try to have all of that information available, but you know, for a lot of people, they haven't tasted enough coffees to understand, you know, what a 1200 meter coffee is going to taste like versus what, you know, an 1800 or a 2000 meter coffee is going to taste like, or, you know, why honey or washed or natural matters, or, you know, why I'm giving the specific micro region within the country. And so a lot of it is, you know, it really comes down to breaking down those knowledge barriers and allowing customers to have a chance to taste a lot of different coffees. And the more, you know, you kind of taste around, you're able to get a wider perspective and vision of, you know, oh, maybe I really like a coffee from Ethiopia, but I'm not a huge fan of coffees from Rwanda. And then from there, you're able to say, oh, I really love, you know, this naturally processed coffee from Ethiopia, but I'm not so much into this, you know, this other type or whatever.
There's a standard set of categories for describing coffee. And I want to mention them, and I want to ask, you know, if you guys agree, which I think you guys do. But so when you're describing, or the main focus of a coffee that you're going to look at would be the aroma, the acidity, the body, and we can talk in more depth about what these mean, the flavor, and the aftertaste. Do you guys agree that those five things are kind of like the basic element of how you could kind of start understanding the taste of a cup?
Yeah, those are kind of considered the main categories that most coffees are judged by on like a cupping form. A cupping form is the way that importers and roasters evaluate coffee on a qualitative level. You know, it's hard to take something subjective like, you know, tasting a coffee and then give it kind of this objective quantified score. So they've taken those attributes and broken them down by that, and then they've given them different values, and roasters and cuppers are able to take those values, and after tasting a lot of coffees over many years, they train their palates and are able to, you know, give quantifiable scores to those attributes to kind of say whether a coffee is good or not. So I think like that, those are definitely like this, you know, the starting points of, you know, the things to consider when, you know, you start tasting coffee and trying to pick out exactly what it is that you're experiencing.
One thing that I think is interesting about these main focuses and kind of what Seth was saying with the cupping forms is sometimes it's even less about the description of them in a lot of words and more so like a scale, right? So it might be easier for somebody to describe a cup and say that, you know, there was not, they didn't get a lot out of the aroma,
right?
Or yeah, it smelled very good. You know, does that make sense?
So instead of actually like describing,
instead of
it,
saying, oh, it was butterscotch and like there's right. a little bit of a strawberry, whatever, and just a squeeze of orange. Just yeah, there was a lot going on.
That was actually what I found really interesting about Blueprint Coffee's bag.
Yeah.
Whereas they have all the information that we kind of discussed just a bit ago, they don't have tasting notes on their bag, but they do instead actually have sort of a scale of body, sweetness, and acidity. And they sort of draw a little picture on the bag of their rating. I think it's like I think there's like three tick marks on it, but their rating of how much sweetness versus how much acidity versus how much body a specific coffee has. And I actually found that to be really helpful when tasting a coffee, kind of looking at their evaluation of it and saying, yeah, I tend to agree with that, even though it wasn't directly, you know, specific about the kind of flavors and things that I would expect from some notes on bags.
In my experience, I think a lot of, you know, those categories, aroma, acidity, body, flavor, aftertaste, a lot of it comes down to what your personal preference is. If as far as I prefer really bright coffees, so, you know, I pay a lot of attention to what the main and dominant acidity is, or if a coffee has acidity or not. And then flavor is another big thing. You know, what is the flavor, or does it have good flavor? You know, even that simple. For me, like body, you know, the mouthfeel of a coffee, first of all, because I'm tasting and drinking mostly washed or, you know, a handful of natural coffees, the body's not going to change. And I pretty much always brew on a paper filtered brewer. So the body's not going to change a whole lot. For me, aroma, you know, that I kind of take a note of whether, you know, it's highly aromatic or whether it's subdued. And the aftertaste is kind of, you know, I could take it or leave it. Those things are kind of just personally what I go for, as far as what I'm looking for and when I'm tasting coffees and evaluating from a personal standpoint. So if you highly value the way a coffee smells, then you're going to pay more attention to the aroma. If you, you know, if you care a lot about what the mouthfeel or the texture, or the body of the coffee is, you know, then maybe you're probably going to pay more attention to how you're brewing it, because, you know, it's also important to note that how you're brewing a coffee is going to affect all of those categories as well. A full immersion metal filtered brew, you know, like a French press lets a lot of oils through. So, you know, just from a, you know, physiological standpoint, your tongue is going to be perceiving a lot more oils, which is going to decrease the perception of acidity, and it's going to increase the perception of body and mouthfeel. So, you know, giving a body a score or kind of like a quantitative amount, you know, as like this coffee is always lightly bodied, is not necessarily true, because if you brew it as a French press, the oils and other things can affect and have it, you know, potentially have it be a more full body comparatively to that.
Yeah. And Brian, you and I have talked a little bit about certain coffees that we've had and a certain effect that actually has a big impact on flavor. Just offline, we talk a lot about cooling on a cup and how right. That changes the taste of a particular coffee.
When a coffee's really hot, I don't know exactly what the temperature is, but I do know that there's a threshold of which, like, you can't really perceive a lot of taste of what's going on. But for me, one thing that kind of adds to my personal like score or opinion on a coffee is if it goes through a lot of change from its warmest moments to its coolest moments, or if it's a really solid, you know, cup and it kind of stays the same the whole way. There's places for that too, but I just know that there are different times in the cooling process that the sweetness will grow in the cup, or certain ways that I might describe the body might change.
I mean, I personally don't really dig in or taste a coffee until about 8 minutes after I brewed it, just to let it cool down to a substantial point. You know, if it's over 160, 170 degrees, that's really just too hot for your tongue to really be able to perceive a lot of different flavors. So at that point, you're kind of doing yourself a disservice by potentially burning your tongue, but you're definitely not being able to taste anything, you know? So, you know, from my understanding, kind of the further away you are from body temperature, the more difficult it's going to be to taste the coffee. So in my personal experience, drinking a coffee between 120 or 130 degrees, that's kind of the sweet spot where there's kind of the most balance of acidity and sweetness and body all at the same time. But I, you know, like you, I really love, you know, tasting coffee as it cools down. And, you know, if a coffee doesn't taste good cold, that's kind of like my opinion of, it's not a great coffee. You know, if a coffee is good from start to finish, I think that's a really good coffee.
All this talking about tasting and describing coffee, are we just sort of kind of overthinking things?
Now, where are you getting away from professionally talking, right? You're talking about just as,
yeah, in general,
as like the people listening to this podcast or us, just,
yeah, so,
in common.
So I think anyone out there who is not necessarily a coffee professional being paid to describe coffee and market it as such, is it even important for any of us to really understand how to do this? Or are we just sort of making things too complicated? Should we just sit back in our chairs, enjoy the coffee, and not have to talk about it?
I think that if you get enjoyment out of it, and if it elevates your coffee experience and you dive deeper into coffee because of it, then I think that it absolutely is important, because I think that anything that makes that experience better to you is a critical aspect of it. If you find that it starts to, you know, make you feel insecure as a taster because you don't feel confident in your tasting ability, or if you feel like it's all fluff and, you know, that, you know, everyone who's using these really, you know, flowery words to describe coffee, if it's all full of hot air, then yeah, then, you know, it's not important, and it, you know, could be detracting from your, you know, perception of enjoyment. So I think that at the end of the day, it all comes down to if it improves and enhances your enjoyment of the coffee drinking experience, especially, you know, with other people, being able to taste coffee with other people and talk about it with other people. I think that tasting coffees and comparing notes, or, you know, using that opportunity to share, oh, this is what I'm getting, or, you know, I think that a lot of that has an opportunity to make people enjoy that aspect of coffee a little bit more. So, you know, for me, if it does that, then do it. And if not, you know, then just, you know, drink what you enjoy.
We've kind of hit on it earlier, but I definitely think there's a difference between tasting and describing coffee for yourself and tasting and describing it for others, because there are times where I go into a lot of detail in terms of how I'm perceiving a cup to taste. And like you, I do that so that I can remember that experience, because two things, actually. Either the ones that I go on and on and on about are like the ones I want to revisit again next year, almost guaranteed, because there's so much to say about it. But on the other end, sometimes the ones I say the least amount about are the ones I want to make sure, because I could never take the time to describe what was going on, either because there was so much going on, it's hard to put into words. Or two, because I just didn't want to pull away from drinking the cup. So sometimes I have to make notes like, yes, this was good. But on the other side of keeping notes or to describe a cup for yourself as on one side of it, there's always the other end of needing to be able to understand how to be relatable in your conversation with somebody else. Because if I'm talking to somebody who's never had a coffee from Kenya before, and I talk about like this, like a grapefruit acidity, and maybe there's some slightly savory sweet tomato, and it's got, you know, this black currant, you know, density to it, they're going to go, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Will I like it? And why will I like it? So depending on, you know, what your goal is in tasting described coffee, be it for you or be it to, you know, just try and grow your understanding to help other people grow their understanding, you know, to understand the context and how you're going to communicate that.
I think it's it for me, it's really interesting because I like being able to describe coffee on my own a lot, because I can compare it to things that I know and that I'm familiar with. Whereas if I were to see those same comparisons or those same notes like on a bag from a roaster, I'd probably be scratching my head like, what? What are you talking about? Let me give you a perfect example of that. So a coffee that will remain nameless, I served up in the office today, and I actually put in my notes, their specific notes about that coffee, and you know, it was something to the effect of it tasted like raisin pie. Okay, well, you know, one of my coworkers sent me.
I've never even had a raisin pie.
Exactly. His words exactly. One of my coworkers sent me a message right after that and said, I didn't even know raisin pie existed. I'm like, well, yeah, I guess it does. I'm like, does this coffee taste like raisin pie? I have no idea. You know, but for me personally, like, you know, I think on the last episode where we talked about the Asda Cafe, you know, I was drinking that coffee and right about, you know, somewhere in the middle of it, it just started tasting like, you know, oatmeal cream pies. And, you know, I totally associated the flavors that I was getting with that coffee as oatmeal cream pie. But I guarantee you, if they put that on the bag when they had sent it to me, I'd probably been like, what? Are you serious? Or, you know, if that coffee had been sent somewhere else where they'd never even heard of an oatmeal cream pie, it probably wouldn't be very relatable. So there's a big difference there. You know, you and your own personal descriptions of coffee can be a little bit more specific and more subjective to your own experiences, whereas it's a challenge, I guess, for a roaster to do that same thing.
I've got a cool resource that I'm throwing in the show notes, and it's from Sweet Maria's, and it's a little bit about teaching to taste.
Oh, yeah.
And in the first, like, intro section of it, they say that what's important is that writing about a sensory experience like this is that we're talking about is that it's challenging, right? So most people have the ability to taste, and our sensitivity to particular tastes and other preferences are subjective, like you were leading to. So some of that's biological, some is related to exposure and memory, and learning to be a taster or tasting on purpose is all about learning to discern one taste from another, and to perceive how those different elements interact. So keeping in mind that it's not just about the details, but how those details form the whole picture. So it's the notes. A lot of times for me, for you, are going to be something that, you know, only I can describe. And so like if my mom made a killer key lime pie, if I were to reference a key lime pie for whatever reason, it's probably going to relate to this experience of this killer key lime pie that I had. Somebody who doesn't know me will experience it a different way. You know, that's one thing that we probably should have prefaced in the very beginning too. But I don't think we did, is that it's all super subjective.
Yeah.
And that's one thing, Seth and I, you know, months and months and months ago, I don't think we had a debate about it, but just something we always kind of kept going back and forth on. Actually, it was probably just Seth talking to me about it, just saying the point about how subjective taste is and in tasting notes. And I think it was going into what he mentioned about things getting so verbose. And it's just that, you know, there's these expectations being set that are hard to meet because you're not taking into consideration every parameter that somebody's brewing on or what gear they have, what water they're using. We talked about water we talked about how we were going to talk about water, you know, and how important that is. And
we may someday talk about water.
We may someday talk. We're still gathering some resources and people, we're not ignoring it. Trust us. But yeah, it's such a subjective thing that sometimes you just got to kind of pinpoint some of these main focuses. And I think that's sometimes why they do those attributes with body and acidity and stuff like that. Sometimes is maybe they're just a little bit easier to, they're the broad descriptions of what can just get finer and finer and finer and finer. But the more you do that, you have the challenge of being unrelatable.
So one of the things that our guest, Seth, has the responsibility of doing on a regular basis is describing coffees to customers. And I think it's super interesting to me the way that, that Seth particularly and a lot of other roasters have chosen to do this very similar thing. How would you go about communicating the way that a coffee tastes? You use three words for the most part, right?
Yeah, pretty much every coffee has three words.
So what's your breakdown, I guess, when you choose those words to communicate the way a coffee is going to taste? Like, how do you choose what you're going to talk about?
Going back to what you were saying, I think it's important to note that, you know, there's no wrong answers, you know, when tasting coffee. You know, if it tastes like something to you, that's what it tastes like. And I think that that's kind of where a lot of the really ultra-specific tasting notes go down the wrong direction, is that person who is tasting that coffee may have a personal memory or experience where they tasted that, you know, key lime pie or whatever it is, and then they use it as a flavor note on the bag, but very few people have that same relatability. So for my job, what I try to do is try to meet everybody where they're at and have the, you know, be as most relatable as I possibly can. So for the most part, I actually try to avoid combining different flavors together. So like key lime pie, I wouldn't really do, because that's not just lime acidity. That's also creaminess. That's also graham cracker crust. Same with like raisin pie or something. I try to avoid combining those flavors, because a lot of the times sweetness and body and mouthfeel and acidity, they present themselves differently to different people, and it's not always combined in that way. So generally, if you were to receive like a miso box sampler, or if you go on our website and look at any of our coffees, you'll see that all coffees have a kind of a three-word base system. So I kind of break it down into, what is the primary flavor? So the first word you're going to see is, what's the primary flavor of this coffee? So if it's, you know, you can pretty much go and look on any of the coffees, and a primary flavor is likely going to be chocolatey, caramel, nutty, earthy, depending on where it's from. Those are pretty much going to be the main flavors of almost every coffee, unless it's like an African coffee, then fruity is probably going to be potentially one of the main flavor notes if it's natural or from Kenya or something. So that's kind of like, you know, when you taste this coffee, if you didn't know anything else, if you didn't know where it came from, but you tasted the coffee, that's pretty much what you're going to taste. And those are actually pretty broad spectrums, because even within chocolate alone, you have everything from really bitter cocoa nibs to dark chocolate, and baker's chocolate, and cocoa powder, and milk chocolate. So there's a lot of different flavors that can be in that wheel, that, you know, if someone's brewing a different way or using different water or grinder or whatever, you know, if you say chocolate, you're probably going to hit somewhere in there, rather than saying for a fact that this coffee is a dark chocolate or this coffee is exactly a hazelnut. I'm just going to say it's nutty. And most people, you know, if you're consciously thinking about it and relating it, you might be able to pick that up. Then the second word is pretty much what it's going to be, kind of a second more complementary or more subtle flavor note. A lot of the time, that's where I include the acidity or just kind of like a supporting flavor role. So a lot of the time you'll see that I use the word citrus or floral as kind of secondary notes. And a lot of the time, it's not necessarily that every coffee that has that descriptor is, you know, citrusy, but that there's a presence of acidity, and that almost anybody brewing on any device would be able to detect that and know what I'm talking about. Because I very rarely, you know, expect someone, if I included the word malic acidity, as we talked about earlier, very few people know what malic acid is, where it comes from, how different concentrations affect coffee, or how, you know, if there's a lot of malic acid, it could taste, you know, like a green apple. If there's a little bit of malic acid in some other sugars, you know, it could taste like a, you know, like a Red Delicious or something. So, you know, I try to avoid being ultra specific to that point where I'm totally unrelatable to people. And then the third one is going to be kind of this like obscure, more so generalized characteristic. It's going to be bright or rich or juicy or delicate. And those are kind of overall characteristic words that, to me, like if I were to personify or characterize a coffee, you know, a coffee that's going to be caramely and nutty is going to be rich. There's not going to be a lot of acid to it. It's going to be a hearty kind of warming coffee. And so a lot of people who are looking for that, you know, kind of look for the word rich, and that's what they associate with it. Whereas if someone's looking for, you know, a geisha or a washed Ethiopian, they might, you know, get like citrus and floral and delicate or juicy or something like that. So I try to break it down into really relatable, basic kind of categories for anybody to understand. And then from there, I'll get a little bit more, you know, precise with what the roaster uses for their descriptors kind of down below in like the little short bio.
If you were going to give somebody a recommendation starting out, like describing coffee for themselves, what kind of steps would you recommend that somebody go through, or how would you recommend that somebody get started trying to keep maybe a journal or keep a running log of coffees, like so that they could, you know, keep an archive of all the stuff that they've tasted before? Like how would you recommend somebody tasting coffee?
I think first of all, I would recommend finding a friend who is also as interested in tasting coffees as you are. You know, tasting coffee with other people is one of the most beneficial ways to developing your palate, because a lot of the times what happens when multiple people taste together is you're able to have some sort of reference together, and one person might say, okay, this tastes like red fruit. And from there, there's a ton of red fruit. I mean, there's red apple all the way to currants, to strawberries, to cranberries and cherries. Like there's a lot of red fruit out there. And, you know, going back and forth, you may not be able to pick that up by yourself, but bouncing off back and forth with other people, you may be able to dig in and dive and find that, you know, maybe more specific. So find someone who, you know, is also interested in tasting coffee, and taste with them, bounce words off each other. I think having, you know, creating a journal or a log of the coffees that you had and what you perceive, I think that that's really helpful. And, you know, as you go on and as you write notes down and as you taste more and more coffees, you're building your archive in your brain of what different things taste like. And the more exposure you have, the more you're going to be able to understand what different flavor notes are or what roasters mean. So, and as you kind of look back over a certain amount of time, you'll be able to see your notes change and the way that you think about coffee or the way that you're describing them change. So finding someone to taste with and then writing your notes down, those are both really, really helpful ways to get into tasting.
And Brian, you and I have been keeping notes for a long time. You probably longer than I have. And your notes kind of look a lot different than mine. What, in the process of tasting a coffee, how do you end up describing it or sort of the mechanics of you describing it? I know you briefly touched on it before, but.
So when I first got started, I never picked one of these up, but I looked at what the 33 books, they have this thing called 33 cups of coffee, and each page just lets you write down the coffee name or origin or who roasted it, when it was roasted, or a short section to jot down notes. You can put a rating on there. And even if that's all you fill out, that's informative to help out, right? And then like how it was brewed. And then it gives a generic flavor wheel. I started looking at, which I don't want to say this is like what reference people should use, but when Counterculture came out with their flavor wheel, I started kind of looking at how different things were described, different terminology, different flavors. And as I would drink coffee, I would look at that and, you know, and I would try and see where my mind was going compared to fruits that I had or different other foods, right? And part of that is even going to the grocery store and getting different types of fruits or and trying them for their sweetness, for their acidity. But I think what you're getting at is what I did when I started like my blog, Abandoned Coffee. I mainly was using that as my tool to get stuff out. I use that as my like journal per se, and I was doing vertical tastings. And so what I mean by vertical tastings, I had a lot of different brewing devices, so I wanted to take a coffee and see what it did under different parameters. Now, this isn't to say you need a bunch of devices in order to do vertical tastings. This could be doing a V60 at one dose or at one, you know, ratio of so much coffee to water, and then widening it, tightening it, or it could be changing whether you're doing a straight pour or a pulse pour, or how many sections of pulse pouring you're doing, coarsen your grind, tighten your grind. There's a lot of different changes you can do to see how different a coffee performs and what nuances come out from that. So, but with me personally, I was doing that with just different brewing devices to see, you know, what I would get out of a V60 versus a Chemex versus a Clever coffee dripper versus an AeroPress.
I created a spreadsheet, and my spreadsheet is ridiculous at this point. It's grown to astronomical proportions. But I tend to, you know, every time I brew a coffee, I put down all the pertinent details that I can think of at the time. And then at the very bottom, after I've brewed it and getting into it, you know, that's where I explain what the coffee tastes like. And, I've also gotten down to the point where I'll even rate coffees, but not in sort of a comparative way to where, like, this coffee was better than that coffee. I found it kind of helpful recently to say, you know, is this just an average cup of coffee? You know, meaning, like, I probably wouldn't go buy it again. Is this an enjoyable cup of coffee? Like, hey, you know, I would probably, if somebody served me this in a restaurant, or if I got this at a coffee shop, I'd be totally happy with it. And I'd really enjoy drinking it again if somebody gave it to me again. And then my next and top rating is exceptional. Like, is this a coffee that just blew my mind? I was really excited about it. And, man, I would totally buy a bag of this coffee and send it to somebody. Like, so just three different ratings that I give to coffees.
Yeah, I feel like it's easy for me to look back this year at a bunch of the Kenyan coffees that I've had to figure out which one was better because it had a little bit more sweetness or was a little bit more balanced or whatever, but still knowing, yeah, I like coffees from, I like coffees from Africa. Yeah. I like Kenyan coffees, right? So, like, I could be tedious like that, but I also know, well, yeah, those generally are going to fit a profile that I enjoy. If you really want to start to understand this, and Seth mentioned doing this with getting together with a person, and this would be good too, is, and they do this with cupping too. You try coffees from different regions, and you can clearly see when you do that the differences between, you know, different coffees. But you want to try and do that with places that are different from each other. If you have a table and you've brewed a bunch of different Kenyan coffees, it's going to be a little bit harder to discern what the differences between those are, because they're going to be more subtle. But if you were to take coffee from Sumatra, put on the same table as natural processed coffee from Ethiopia, and then put it on the table with a nice washed micro lot from Colombia, you're going to be able to kind of understand that there are differences. And the more you do that, the more you pick up on what those differences are.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes back to Seth's point earlier. You know, you don't necessarily, describing coffee or being able to tell the difference between coffees, maybe not necessarily something that we're just all sort of naturally equipped to do, but definitely something that with experience and the more you do it, I mean, the more clear it becomes, the differences between coffees and the impact that a brew method is going to have versus that brew method or whatever. Definitely something that the more experience you have, the more coffees you try, which is also one of the benefits of being able to sample various coffees through some of these subscription services or coffee sampler options. You know, maybe focusing a little bit more intentionally on growing your understanding of these differences by buying a bunch of different coffees, or even I think, like you touched on, Brian, like going to the store and just buying a bunch of different kinds of fruit, or going to the store and buying a bunch of different kinds of nuts, and, you know, sort of training your palate that way, being able to identify some of these differences.
Yeah. And even like what Seth mentioned with different types of chocolate.
Yeah.
You know, and these are all things that just kind of, they're kind of palate training enhancing, and just to get, you know, a more recent update, you know, I guess to say,
sure,
on how your senses grasp things.
James Hoffman, you know, hits on this in that excerpt that you read. You know, he says he can't stress enough how important the comparative part of it is, you know, and whether that be coffee side by side on the cupping table or fruits next to each other or chocolates or nuts, you know, being able to taste one coffee by itself, you have to go off of your memory, off of your experiences, which are extremely flawed and inaccurate. But if you have that comparison, that context right in front of you, then it's a lot easier to see what those differences are. If you have a semi-washed Sumatran coffee next to a washed Columbia, you know, you're going to understand what we mean by earthy, because you're going to taste the washed Columbia and it's going to be a brighter, cleaner, lighter, it's a much more refined flavor profile. And then you're going to taste that Sumatra and it's going to be, oh my gosh, this is really earthy. And it kind of smells like, you know, the soil after it rains, or, you know, mushrooms or tobacco or leather or whatever. Just having those two side by side will help give you context and understanding. So yeah, having, you know, fruits, you know, say, hey, let's do a citrus tasting. You know, if you want to get really nerdy, go and, you know, buy an orange and a tangerine and a grapefruit and a lime and a lemon, taste them side by side and understand, okay, maybe a grapefruit is like on the bitter side of this acidity, and a lemon is going to be on this tart sweet side, and then a lime is going to be on the sour side, you know, an orange is going to be towards the sweeter side. And so just kind of understanding that even within just the flavor family of citrus, there's a huge range of, you know, flavor categories and dynamics that can happen. So being able to taste them next to each other and have reference and say, okay, I can identify that this coffee or this note is going to be citrus. And then I just tasted all of these citruses and I know it's leaning, you know, this Kenya is leaning more towards this grapefruit, whereas this washed Guatemala is going to be leaning more towards the lime or the lemon.
And like Seth mentioned earlier, there's no right or wrong. There's just, how do we say it at the very end? There's just reaching and unrelatable, right? And all that is within the context of you as a taster and the context of the conversation, whether it be just something you're having for yourself or with somebody else. So, anything that you do is only, it's only for the purpose of growth and understanding. And it should be seen as that, and it shouldn't be seen as something frustrating, kind of like, again, from the James Hoffman excerpt, you know, it's not for you to be disappointed because you're not able to find what a roaster put on there or anything like that. You know, it should be just to kind of guide your experience or to help focus or any of those details. And it should not be seen as a chore as much as it should just be seen as something exciting to explore and understand the nuances between the different coffees that are, you know, miraculously and wonderfully made available to us through all these great roasters and importers and farmers and co-ops, which provide them to us as a consumer.
Well, I was super excited about this episode, and I'm even more satisfied after hearing all this discussion about tasting. And big thanks to Seth for joining us. Seth, if people want to find you on social media, where can they follow you?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Seth Mills.
And we do want to reach out to everybody else because, you know, this has been a rather lengthy discussion about flavor notes and tasting coffees, and I would really like to hear your feedback. If you have had any experience tasting coffees, or if you've had any frustrations tasting coffees, or if there's something you want to know more about when it comes to developing your palate, we'd love to hear what you've got to talk about. Just hashtag your posts IBMOC talk and or reply to our posts on Instagram. And we'd love to continue a conversation all about flavor notes, tasting coffees, challenges that you might face, frustrations you might have about, you know, not meeting up to a roaster's specified flavor notes. We'd love to continue that discussion.
And keep in mind, Brian and I are not pros on this topic by any means. No we're way. Just we've just
not even close.
We're in the same boat, and you know, we've in some cases we're you know, Brian mentioned I've been taking notes for a while, so in regards to that, I've been doing that for a while, so I have some sort of understanding of that. Seth's been doing that for years too, but it's we're all in the same place. So we're not trying to say anything authoritative as much as just kind of laying it out there so that we can engage in conversation about it.
So if you want to follow along with us on social media, we are on Instagram. We are at I Brew My Own Coffee. We're on Twitter at Brew My Own Coffee. We're also available on our website at ibrewmyowncoffee.com, and you can contact us there by clicking on the contact us link at the top of the page. If you haven't reviewed the podcast, go on over to iTunes and leave us a review. That'd be great. I had a couple of reviews this last week, and if you got something nice to say, head on over and give us a shout out. Appreciate everybody for tuning in, and happy tasting, everybody.
Go get your pumpkin spice lattes, guys.